In one sense, the methods of science and Buddhism are different. Scientific investigation proceeds by experiment using instruments that analyze external phenomena, whereas contemplative investigation proceeds by the development of refined attention, which is then used in the introspective examination of inner experience. But both share a strong empirical basis. If science shows something to exist or to be non-existent, which is not the same as not finding it, then we must acknowledge that as a fact. If a hypothesis is tested and found to be true, we must accept it. Likewise, Buddhism must accept the facts, whether found by science or found by contemplative insights. If, when we investigate something, we find there is reason and proof for it, we must acknowledge that as reality, even if it is in contradiction with a literal scriptural explanation that has held sway for many centuries or with a deeply held opinion or view. So one fundamental attitude shared by Buddhism and science is the commitment to keep searching for reality by empirical means and to be willing to discard accepted or long-held positions if our search finds that the truth is different. By contrast with religion, one significant characteristic of science is the absence of an appeal to scriptural authority as a source of validating truth claims. All truths in science must be demonstrated either through experiment or through mathematical proof. The idea that something must be so because Newton or Einstein says so is simply not scientific. So, an inquiry has to proceed from a state of openness with respect to the question at issue and to what the answer might be, a state of mind which I think of as healthy skepticism. This kind of openness can make individuals receptive to fresh insights and new discoveries, and when it is combined with the natural human quest for understanding, this stance can lead to a profound expanding of our horizons. Of course, this does not mean that all practitioners of science live up to this ideal. Some may indeed be caught in earlier paradigms. With regard to the Buddhist investigative traditions, we Tibetans owe a tremendous debt to classical India, the birthplace of Buddhist philosophical thinking and spiritual teaching. Tibetans have always referred to India as the land of the noble ones. This is the country that gave birth to the Buddha and to a series of great Indian masters whose writings have fundamentally shaped the philosophical thinking and the spiritual tradition of the Tibetan people. The 2nd century philosopher Nagarjuna, the 4th century luminaries Asanga and his brother Vasubandhu, the great ethical teacher Shantideva, and the 7th century logician Dharmakirti. Since my flight from Tibet in March 1959, a large number of Tibetan refugees and I have been extremely fortunate to find a second home in India. The president of India in my early years in exile was Dr. Rajendra Prasad, a deeply spiritual man and respected legal scholar. The vice president, who later became president, was Dr. Sarvapalli Radhakrishnan, whose professional and personal interests in philosophy were widely known. I vividly remember an occasion when, in the middle of a discussion of some philosophical question, Radhakrishnan spontaneously recited a stanza from Nagarjuna's classic, Fundamental Wisdom of the Middle Way. It is most remarkable that since independence in 1947, India has maintained the noble tradition of investing noted thinkers and scientists with the nation's presidency. After a difficult decade of adjustment, helping to settle the community of around 80,000 Tibetan refugees in various parts of India, setting up schools for the youth and attempting to preserve the institutions of a threatened culture, I began my international travels toward the end of the 1960s. In addition to sharing my understanding of the importance of basic human values, advocating interreligious understanding and harmony, and promoting the rights and freedoms of the Tibetan people, I have taken the opportunity during my travels to meet distinguished scientists to discuss my interests, develop my knowledge, and delve ever deeper into my understanding of science and its methods. Even as early as the 1960s, I had discussed aspects of the interface between religion and science with some valued visitors to my residence in Dharamsala in northern India. Two of the most memorable meetings of this period were with the Trappist monk Thomas Merton, who had a deep interest in Buddhism and opened my eyes to Christianity, and the scholar of religion, Houston Smith.